Well, good morning, everyone. This is, unfortunately, in a way, this is the last day I'll be able to spend with you shortly after services. My wife and I have to leave, but it certainly has been a wonderful 4 days. Appreciate meeting all of you, talking with you. Some I did get to talk with, maybe some I didn't get to talk with enough, but there's just so much time, you know, to go around. What I hope to do in this final message is to sort of wrap up the Land Sabbath, the Shemitah, the seventh year of release, and an overview of the Jubilee year. And hopefully read you a portion from a news clipping I took, read years ago, showing that God's covenant with those people of Israel is valid even today in the 20th and 21st century. God made certain promises, and he keeps those promises. You and I are not under the old covenant. We are, well, technically we're not in the new covenant yet, but we're under the terms of the new covenant. The new covenant will be firmly established with the return of Jesus Christ. But the Jewish people, in what is known as Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, were told to do certain things. And if they did them, God promised he would bless them. And I'm going to read you some astounding accounts of what God did during and after what we would call the Shemitah year or the Land Sabbath, what he did with crops and what he did to stop a locust plague. You will be amazed. This is historically documented. Of course, it didn't get very much play in the press. Obviously, you don't want to really acknowledge God very much, but nevertheless, it's there. So let us start with the Land Sabbath. Exodus, the 23rd chapter. Exodus chapter 23. And here we have the basis of it. Exodus chapter 23 and beginning in verse 10. And you shall sow your land 6 years and shall gather in the fruits of it. But in the seventh year, you shall let it lie rest and be still so that the poor of your people may eat. And what they leave, the animals of the field shall eat. In the same way, you shall deal with your vineyard and with your olive grove. Now, let us look clearly at verse 11. It talks about in the seventh year, you shall let it rest and lie still. The word for rest here is the basic Hebrew word shamat, which means leave it alone, unplowed, don't touch it, let it go. Now the word for not rest, but the word still is more of mashat, which means unused. So if you want to have a more literal translation to get the feel of it, it would be let it go and leave it alone. So one act is let the land go. Hey, come on, stand back. You've been working it for 6 years. Let it go. Let it rest. Now, once it's away from you, stay away from it. Leave it be. So it's sort of a play on words in a way. But that's what it means. It means to let it go and let it be. Now, in that way, the land would rest and be still. But something was very interesting here. You will notice what it says in that same verse, so that the poor of your people may eat. Now, I thought God was supposed to bless the people. I thought there weren't supposed to be poor people there. But let's look at verse 3, just a few verses up, where God says, neither shall you be partial to a poor man in his cause. A poor man? Yes, they're poor. And verse 6, you shall not pervert the judgment due to the poor in his cause. Now, notice something that God says, which is very striking, in Deuteronomy chapter 15. We're not going to stay in Deuteronomy 15. We're going to come back, but look what God made us. God made almost a blockbuster statement, if we can use that language. Deuteronomy chapter 15 and verse 11. And what does he say? For the poor shall never cease out of the land. Therefore, I command you, saying, you shall open your hand wide to your brother, to your poor, and to your needy in your land. But that was also echoed by the Son of God, Jesus of Nazareth. Let us see what he had to say on this subject about the poor. Let's look at the Gospels. In this case, we'll start out with Matthew chapter 26. Actually, we'll find the same thing in Mark 14 and John 12. But let's look at Matthew 26. It happens to be the first of the Gospels. So we'll start out there. Matthew chapter 26. And we'll pick it up in verse 6. Matthew 26 and verse 6. Now when Jesus was in Bethany, in Simon the leper's house, a woman came to him with an alabaster flask of ointment, very precious, and poured it on his head as he sat down to eat. But when his disciples saw it, they became indignant and said, "What reason is there for this waste? For this ointment could have been sold for much and the money given to the poor." But Jesus knew this and said to them, "Why do you trouble? Why do you cause trouble for this woman? For she has performed a good work toward me. For you have the poor with you always, but you do not always have me." So it's an interesting question. Why are there poor people? Well, a number of reasons. Sometimes it's time and chance. Sometimes accidents happen. Sometimes the husband dies, leaves the wife alone. Or, as we used to say when I was growing up, sometimes you have what goes for a husband is a dirty rat fink and leaves her. So she's stuck. Some cases it's just plain poor judgment. You know, there's an old saying, poor people tend to have poor ways. We used to say, you can take the boy out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the boy. Well, you can take certain people out of poverty, but that doesn't mean you can take the poverty thinking out of the person. So for any number of reasons, you could have the poor. Now let us go back to Leviticus 25 for further instructions in this land Sabbath. Leviticus chapter 25. And the Lord spoke to Moses in Mount Sinai, saying, in the first verse of Leviticus chapter 25, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I give you, then shall the land keep a Sabbath to the Lord." Now, this is also a play on words. It's amazing how many times you see this. What it really means is, the land is to cease, a Sabbath ceasing to the Lord. Because while the term Sabbath is listed here once, it actually appears twice in the Hebrew. So it's a ceasing to the Lord. Double emphasis. And God puts emphasis on this land Sabbath. This is very important to him. To you and me living today, well, you know, we're not living in that economy. We're not under this old covenant. So it doesn't mean that much to us. To them and to the God who gave it to them, it meant a lot. That's why he put it this way. So he says, "But in the seventh year shall be a Sabbath of rest to the land." Now this Sabbath of rest, this is what is called a Shabbat Shabbaton. And consequently, it is a solemn rest, a solemn Sabbath. And it's a Sabbath to the Lord. So we're told, "You shall not reap that which grows of its own accord for your harvest. Don't gather the grapes of the undressed vine as a harvest. It is a year of rest." Now this is Shanat, year of rest, Shabbaton. It's a solemn rest to the land. Not just a rest, solemn. God's driving home the point. So again, he's serious. He does mean business. Now, when it came to the Day of Atonement, everybody knows the Day of Atonement. Turn with me to Leviticus chapter 23, and we'll see the same language. Now, God doesn't use this language with every holy day. He doesn't use this language every time you see the word Sabbath, but he uses it here. So the Day of Atonement is a very special day to God. Leviticus chapter 23 and verse 32. "It shall be to you a Sabbath of rest, and you shall afflict yourselves." That phrase is again Shabbat Shabbaton, a solemn rest. Other holy days, God doesn't put it that way. There's something special about the Day of Atonement, perhaps because that is the day that symbolizes the complete wiping out of sin, the complete cleansing of the people. For on that day, is when the high priest went into the Holy of Holies, the incense and Israel's sins were wiped clean, physically speaking, not spiritually, but in terms of being ritually pure for temple worship. And that was very important. So, but this is to show you what God thinks of it, and those who broke it, turn to Leviticus chapter 26. God was very serious, and this is one of the reasons he drove Israel into captivity. Leviticus chapter 26, just a few chapters away. Leviticus chapter 26, and we'll pick it up in verse 33. Leviticus 26, verse 33. And I will scatter you among the nations, and I will draw out a sword after you, and your land shall be a desolation, and your cities waste. Then shall the land enjoy its Sabbaths as long as it lies waste, and you are in your enemy's land. Then shall the land rest and enjoy its Sabbaths. As long as it lies waste, it shall rest, because it did not rest in your Sabbaths when you lived on it. God says, I'm going to give the land rest, because after all, whose land is it? It's my land, says God, not yours. I give it to you. You have homes on it. You plant. You sow your vineyards, your fields. But remember, the land is mine. I order you, let it rest on the seventh year. You didn't do it. You will be in captivity for 70 years so the land can have its rest. And he says the same thing again in 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles, the last book of the Old Testament. And we'll see the same thing. 2 Chronicles, chapter 36. And in verse 20, 2 Chronicles, chapter 36 and verse 20, talks about, and the ones who had escaped from the sword, he carried away to Babylon, where they were servants to him and his sons until the kingdom of Persia, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed its Sabbaths. All the days of the desolation, it kept the Sabbath to the full measure of 70 years. God says, I'm going to give my land a rest. You will be in captivity. When the land has had its rest, I will bring you back, because I have plans for you. He also had some secret plans about his son, which he did not tell them at the time, of course, but God had a purpose for it. Now, this land and this promise was made to the people living at that time, but it isn't just for that time. So now I want to read to you about a certain kibbutz in the land called Eretz Yisrael. In that land, the land God gave to Israel by the hand of Moses. Moses didn't go in, lost his temper, but Joshua led them in. And remember, the old covenant is still there. So this was a kibbutz, Kumeniut is its name, and it was a religious kibbutz, not a secular one. And what happened was, a certain Rav, a certain great religious leader, had about 500 residents in this kibbutz. And they were going to start almost the Shemitah year, beginning of the seventh year land Sabbath. But they didn't plant everything until toward the end of the sixth year. Well, what crops? What are they going to eat? I mean, what was going to happen? Well, let me read as it was printed. The miracles promised by the Torah have been very much in evidence for anyone whose stubbornness has not blinded him to the obvious. As if extending an invitation to all of Israel to observe Shemitah unconcernedly, the wheat crop that year was 300,000 tons, double the amount of the previous year. In characteristic fashion, the directors of the agricultural ministry told a press conference that the bumper crop was merely the result of aggregate improvements in farming technique. Similar explanations were offered for the bumper crop of citrus fruits in the orchards of the Negev. That too, well, you know, secular-minded people, they do not acknowledge the hand of God. The people of Kamenimut however, had no doubt whatsoever as to what was responsible for the sudden prosperity. The Moshav's orchards produced three times their normal crop, a jump from an annual sum of 700 containers to more than 2,000. Jewish agency representatives came to investigate this highly publicized phenomenon, but could not find any rational reason for it. Well, the reason for it is there was no rational reason. God said, if you do this, then in the sixth year, I will command the land to produce. And that's exactly what God did. These were carnal-minded people, to use our old expression. They do not accept the name of Jesus. They do not accept him as the Son of God. They are Jews. But they acknowledge the God who led them into the land, or the God as they understand him. And he told them to do this. And they did. And God said, if you do this, then I will do that. They did this, God did it. But there's more. During the three past Shemitah years, we're going back 21 years over the year's time, observed by these faithful farmers, there was no shortage of wondrous happenings. 14 years ago, the orchard which produced the triple crop last year was written off as certain failure by expert agronomists. The trees were planted shortly before the advent of the Shemitah year and were then abandoned on the orders of the Rav Mendelssohn, which forbade his followers to perform any labor in caring for them. That's what God said. Don't touch them. Leave them alone. Don't plow. Don't harvest. Oh, for food, of course. You know, you can pick apples or pears or whatever you've got. Sure, citrus fruit. But do nothing. Do not put fertilizer on them. Leave them alone. That's what they did. The experts predicted that the saplings would die in a matter of months unless they received the intensive care accorded to other trees planted at the same time. Well, the people of this kibbutz ignored the gloomy predictions, and their faith in God was vindicated. Their trees fared even better than the trees of their neighbors. And here, another amazing thing. Then there was the miracle of the rotten seeds. When it came time for planting in the eighth year, because remember now, this was the first time they had this kibbutz. This was the first time they had planted anything. So they needed seed to plant in the eighth year because they didn't have any seed. So anyway, they went around to neighbors. You have any seed? You have any seed? Well, a couple of the irreligious kibbutz said, well, we do have some of these old seed, but we don't know if they're any good or not. So they found such seeds, and they planted them. And once again, a bumper crop. God said that's what he would do. And if that isn't enough, I still marvel at this. Perhaps one of the most striking miracles of all was that of the locust plague. All of the settlements around this religious kibbutz suffered that Shemitah year from produce-devouring insects. But when the army of locusts reached the borders of Kemeniut, it miraculously came to a halt. As if someone had issued an order that the fields of the Shemitah observers were not to be touched. They just stopped. They were seen on the fences, mulling around, but they never went over the fence into the crop of the Shemitah believers. Now, there's no doubt. God told those locusts, halt. Go no further. That old covenant, believe me, is still in effect. And God still honors it. Now, is God going to honor it in lands other than that land? I don't know. I'm a little hesitant. Because God didn't say to the people in Africa, he didn't say to the people in Asia, he didn't say to the people in Central and South America, he gave the command to the people of Israel who went into that land, which God called his land, but it's still there. See, God still honors his sabbatical year. Now, along with that, we also have what we call the year of release. Now, let's look in Deuteronomy chapter 15. Let's go back to Deuteronomy chapter 15. This is not specifically the land Sabbath. The land Sabbath is not what we're looking at specifically. But this is what God says was to happen. Deuteronomy chapter 15 and verse 1. At the end of every 7 years, you shall make a release. And that word for release, Shemitah. That's where we get the name. And this is the manner of the release. Every man who has a loan to his neighbor shall release it. He shall not exact it from his neighbor or from his brother, because it is called the Lord's release. I'll drop down to verse 4. Except when there shall be no poor among you, for the Lord shall greatly bless you in the land which the Lord your God gives you for an inheritance to possess it. Remember when we talked about this poor? God just said he'll bless them, but there's a caveat there. And Fred has often pointed this out. If, verse 5, if, only if you diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God, to be careful to observe all these commandments, which I command you this day, or I command you today. They didn't do that. You can go back. And you can see for the first couple of generations that went into the land, we don't have time to look at it, but read in Joshua and in the first chapter of the book of Judges. And the people during the lifetime of Joshua and the generation of the first judges, they obeyed God. After that, they went after one false god after another. Just read the book of Judges. And every time God had to bail them out with a judge. That's why. Although God said he would bless them, he said, only if you obey me, obey my voice, do what I tell you to do. They didn't do it. That's why there was really poor among them. Now, they didn't realize what they were doing. They really didn't. But it didn't matter. God said, here's my law, statutes, you see the pillars, obey. They wouldn't do it. Now, this year of release took place at the end of the seventh year. Remember, for agricultural purposes, for commercial purposes, the year does not begin in the spring, like with Passover. Nisan to Nisan? No. It begins in the fall of the year with the Feast of Trumpets, or Rosh Hashanah, as Jews call it, and begins on Tishri 1 and ends 12 or 13 months later, depending on whether it's a leap year or not, Elul 29, because Elul always has 29 days. And just before our Feast of Trumpets, the day before, was Elul 29. On that day, the debts were released. Now, that doesn't mean that if you were a kind soul, you couldn't release them during the year. Well, you could do that. But you had to release them before sunset, beginning the Feast of Trumpets. And what does God say here? Verse 6 of Deuteronomy 15. For the Lord your God blesses you, as he promised. You shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. Verse 7, if there is among you a poor man of one of your brothers inside any of the gates of your land which the Lord gives you, do not harden your heart, but you shall open your hand wide. Verse 9, beware that there is not a thought in your wicked heart, saying, the seventh year, the year of release is at hand, and your eye may be evil against your poor brother, and you give him nothing. Verse 10, you shall surely give to him. Your heart shall not be grieved when you give to him. For this thing the Lord your God will bless you. For again, then we went on to verse 11, the poor shall never cease out of your land. The point was, it was a national calendar. And the seventh year was the seventh year for all of Israel. There's no such thing as the seventh year being a seventh year for one and another year being the seventh year for somebody else. And so God is saying, if it's coming the fifth year and your brother needs a loan, and you're saying, he needs 10,000 from me and he can pay it back 2,000 a year. I can do math. I can calculate. Wait a minute. 2,000 the sixth year, 2,000 the seventh. I'm just, or as Buddha Lou Abbott Costello, as Costello would say, hey, I bet $6,000 just went south. I lost it. No. God says, don't do that. Don't think that way. I will bless you. I will increase your harvests. I will increase your produce. But this was the year of release. Now think of what a wonderful thing it would be. And we don't have time to go, but the Jubilee year, in the 50th year, all debts released. You lost your home that you lived in. At the end of, you could always redeem it if you could, but if you couldn't, God said at the end of the, remember, all the land was his. God said, this is your ancestral home. You shall not lose it. Now, if you had a house in a walled city and you lost it and you couldn't redeem it, hey, tough luck. You lost it. But if it was your home, your ancestral home, the home that God gave you, it had to go back to you in the Jubilee year. No great boom-bust. You're not going to have thousands of people or more crowding into cities because they lost their homes. What an incredible blessing this would be to a country, this agricultural methods, and even in production. You would not have the terrible mess that we have today in this country. So God said, the seventh year of release for the debts, and of course in the Jubilee year, their homes, and if he's serving you, doesn't matter. If he serves you, he shall go back free. Suppose he serves you in the Jubilee year, before the Jubilee year. You know, he's supposed 36 years, and the seventh he shall go free. What if he sold to you in the 47th year or 48th year? Then the Jubilee year trumps the year of release. And no political pun intended. We'll leave the Donald out of this in terms of Trump. If I'm sold to somebody in the 47th year, I'm only going to serve 2.5 years or so. Because in the Jubilee year, God says, you go back home. You are released. That's how important the Jubilee year was to him. It's how important the Shemitah year was to him. It's how important the sabbatical year, the land Sabbath, was to him. It was a rest, it's a rejuvenation, so that a nation would always be on a sound economic footing. Not like we have today with our horrific boom bust. There would be no massive wealth in the hands of just a few people. That doesn't mean that God's against wealth. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't have rich people. He wasn't talking about that. But when you have 4%, 5%, or 3% of the population in control of 80 or 90% of the country's wealth, unconscionable almost. But if people think it's bad in the U.S., you can go back in history. You can go back to the pharaohs of Egypt. You can go back to the rulers of Babylon. In fact, at the beginning of the rise of England in the days of Queen Elizabeth, 2% of the population, that would be his, Her Royal Majesty herself, the clerics and the nobles, 2% of them owned over 85% of all the land and the worth in England. And go to France, where Louis XIV reigned, it was even worse. They called him the Sun King for nothing. He bled his subjects. But that is not to happen in Israel. Therefore, you'll always have a prosperous country. So I hope this gives you an overall view of the Sabbath year, the Sabbath day, the land Sabbath, the year of release, and the Jubilee year. And I hope you'll read more in Leviticus 25 of the specific commands on the Jubilee year. It is fascinating. So with that, we'll close here, and happy to have been with you for the last 4 days, and God be with you all until we meet again.
For our overseas offices, please check our website, www.cbcg.org.